Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. From plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well. Hire high-quality pros at Angie.com.
Are you caring for an aging parent? Are you searching for answers? Welcome to Senior Care Live, a program dedicated to you, providing information, education, and resources, helping you become the best caregiver you can be. I'm your host, Steve Kuecker. Hello and welcome to Senior Care Live. Thanks for tuning in today. I really appreciate it. This program is all about educating seniors and their caregivers, helping them make informed decisions. This is a trusted place for you and your family. If you have a question, you can visit us online at Senior Care Live, L-I-V-E, SeniorCareLive.com, or you can go old school and give us a call at 1-800-331-6445. All right, so we have an excellent program for you here today. I wanted to, before we get into some of the other topics of the day, I just wanted to take some time and recognize a wonderful group of people and just let you know that March, you know, a lot of things happen in March. We have March Madness and St. Patrick's Day, and you know, spring is here, and all the fun stuff. The flowers are going, and the tornadoes are dropping, and the rain's falling, right? But along with that, March, if you didn't know, is Social Work Month. And so I'd like to recognize that and just really celebrate social workers. I know so many incredible social workers. They just do a phenomenal job. So Social Work Month runs for the entire month of March, and this year's theme is social workers are essential. And I agree with that. There's no doubt about it. They truly are essential, and not just during COVID times, but every single day, regardless of pandemic, they are very essential. So March is a time to celebrate social workers for all of the great work that they do. And as practitioners, social workers are trained to help people address many personal issues. They are employed to effect positive change with individuals, families, groups, and entire communities. And social workers help people cope with challenges in their lives. And some social workers, you know, work with groups and community organizations, policymakers to develop or improve programs, services, policies, and social conditions. Social workers could work as substance abuse and recovery treatment counselors, mental health counselors. They could work as a marriage and family counselor, a medical social worker, a school social worker, foster care social worker, child and family therapist, corporate social responsibility, say that five times fast, social worker, policy analyst, and human resources coordinator. So they're working in all kinds of areas, making improvement in people's lives and doing a great job. Now, you could make a general statement to say that social workers are everywhere people need help navigating tough life challenges. And I think that's a good general way to sum that up. So they contribute to interdisciplinary care teams in schools, and hospitals, and mental health centers, nonprofit corporations, for-profit corporations, the military, and in local, state, and federal governments. So many social work professionals also own and operate their own private consulting practices. And that's pretty cool. And there are a lot of them doing that as well. There are more than 700,000 professional social workers employed in the United States and more than 3 million social workers worldwide. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics continues to identify social work as one of the fastest growing professions in the United States. And other government resources report there are more clinically trained social workers providing mental health and behavioral health services than any other professional discipline in the nation. How about that? So, and then there are different degrees of education that you could get and be a social worker. And these folks, every one of them that I know have a minimum of a 4-year degree. Many of them way more than that. So you could get an associate's degree in social work, or you could get a bachelor's, a master's, or even a doctorate PhD in social work. You can also specialize in a particular area to become a licensed clinical social worker, or LCSW. Now, this is going to require someone to have a master's degree followed by a specialization in a particular area of practice. So you must pass all of the clinical level standardization exams and all of those requirements and complete the state's required supervised work hours. So people who are social workers, they're dedicated to helping people. They have most of them have spent a tremendous amount of time in their education. And then in some of these other areas, you have to pass additional exams and get additional certification and licensure and do basically supervised work hours. So that's, on the job training supervised by another clinical social worker. So they have a lot of time and frankly, a lot of money invested in their education. And you can also become a medical social worker. Again, this requires a master's degree in social work, then choosing a focus area in the medical field, and then obtaining licensure in your particular state. And medical social workers help clients and families understand diagnoses and work through all of the emotions that come along with a lot of these diagnoses. So they provide clients and families with counseling for decision making in the healthcare process, and that would include addressing psychological, financial, and social issues related to the diagnosis. And about 25% are employed by ambulatory healthcare services and state, local, and private hospitals. And, I have personally worked with many excellent social workers working in hospitals. And, so in my line of work, this is where I run into most of them here at least in my circle here, working in hospitals and senior care communities. That would include assisted living communities and long-term care communities. And also, I've known a lot of social workers in the home health agencies and, of course, in the hospice agency. So there's a really good chance that your life has been positively affected by a social worker, even if you didn't realize it at the time. So to social workers everywhere, I thank you all of you, for the excellent and tremendous work that you do. My hat's off to you. Happy Social Work Month. All right. Now, we're going to go ahead and move on to the next topic here. I haven't talked about this for a little while, and I've been running into all kinds of examples in the community that's kind of screaming, Steve, you need to review this again. And so we're going to start right at the top. When to consider moving from your home to a senior care community. And I think the reason that this is very timely, and I've mentioned it, the last couple of weeks, normally, we see the peak demand for all senior care communities as January and February, then kind of drifting into March, and then you start to see that decrease a little bit. And we did have an increase in demand in January and February, but guess what also happened? We're in the middle of a pandemic. hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of people who would have otherwise chosen to move to a senior care community. Guess what they did? They're afraid of COVID. They're afraid of getting COVID, or if they are responsible for an aging parent, they didn't want to admit their parent to a senior care community because of the fear of COVID. You're a sitting duck. And this is before we had the vaccines. So they said, we're going to do all that we can to keep our loved one at home. At whatever we have to do, we're bringing in home care. We're getting palliative care from a hospice agency. We're getting that on board. We have family shifts, and we're going to do whatever we have to do to keep our elderly loved ones safe. And that has occurred that's an absolute fact. So here's what we're seeing now. We're seeing all sorts of people who have been sitting on the sidelines, and they're like, okay, now it's a much different situation right now. And we're seeing that, 95%+ of all of the residents in all of our senior care communities in the area, they're fully vaccinated. And there are many places where 100% or maybe 99% of the residents have requested and received that vaccination. And usually it's 75%+ of the staff have also requested and received that vaccination. So all of a sudden, very quickly, almost overnight, it seems like, the senior care communities are a much safer place to be. So guess what's happening? Everyone's saying, ooh, I need to make my phone calls, and I need to reach out to some of the places that I wanted to talk to, and I need to see if beds are available, apartments are available, etc. So after the break, I'm going to continue with the major topic of when to consider moving from your home to a senior care community. But first, the Senior Care Live question of the week. The only thing you need to know before moving to a senior care community is if you can afford it or not. Is that statement true or false? The answer coming up next. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, call now, toll free, 1-800-331-6445. Operators are standing by, 1-800-331-6445. I'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, visit seniorcarelive.com. And don't forget, you can stream this program to any electronic device at seniorcarelive.com and through the app radio.com. All right, back to the Senior Care Live question of the week. The only thing you need to know before moving to a senior care community is if you can afford it or not. Is that statement true or false? And the answer is false. The answer is false. And I will address that in depth here in just a little bit. But back to one of the main issues of the day, and actually a major issue in our community right now, when to consider moving from your home to a senior care community. And regardless of the pandemic and the peak demand being extended, I think it's going to be extended clear out here into June now, with everyone starting to wake up and reconsider moving to a community. Regardless of all of that, this is the most frequently asked question that I have answered clear back to 2002 when I started senior care consulting. All right, so I always say sometimes it's very clear when you should move from your home to a senior care community. And it's when it's obvious, it's really obvious, okay? But more often than not, it's kind of gray. It's not that obvious. And so I like to say that the following things should trigger, at least trigger the conversation of considering moving from your home to a senior care community. All right, at the top of the list, this is also probably obvious, when it is no longer safe to live at home. Okay, so there's some sort of a safety issue. Now, some of these safety issues are pretty obvious. Some of them are not obvious in any way. So I'll just provide a few examples here. When your loved one has fallen victim to financial abuse. Had a really, really sweet lady that I worked with. There was a storm in their neighborhood, some trees down, etc. Some guy knocks on her door the next day, "Ma'am, my crew is in the area. We're going to be repairing and replacing a lot of roofs in the area, making some repairs on the homes, etc., hauling trees away. And I noticed that your roof has been damaged. While we're here, do you want us to put you on the list? And it'll just be a couple of days, and then we'll make you a priority after we work with a couple of your neighbors right over here. We can get that work done for you so you don't have any water damage in your home, et cetera." And she got very flustered by that. "Oh, my goodness. Okay, yeah, I'm so glad you stopped by." And they said, "Okay, we'll just need a check for $1,000 to hold your place. We'll apply that to, you know, the final bill, and we should be able to get to it here in the next couple of days." So she could not write that check fast enough. Of course, this... I'm not going to say what I want to say about him because you're not supposed to swear on the air. But this real neat guy took her check, cashed it, and of course, he was never seen again. And so that's a safety issue. That's a major safety issue. Leaving the stovetop burners on, that's a major fire hazard and safety issue. And I can't tell you how many times I have heard stories about that. One of my clients said, "Yeah, I knew it was time to call you. I've been putting it off and putting it off until I walked into my own house with my mother, who has Alzheimer's, and my two kids in my house. And I opened the door, and the smell of natural gas was thick in the air in the house." She ran into the kitchen to find out that her mom had left the gas on, and of course it didn't light, but the gas was running, filled the whole house. She opened the doors, she got everyone out of the house. One little bitty spark from static electricity or from anything would have lit the gas, and that whole house would have just been literally a giant bomb. They got real lucky. And that was not the first time she had left the burners on. Now, fortunately, that's a pretty easy one to fix. If it's gas, you can turn the gas off, have the gas turned off to the stove, so it's just inoperable. So you just take it out of the equation. If it's an electric stove and burner and oven, etc., that's really easy. You flip the breaker or you just unplug it. You just make it inoperable. So can't tell you how many times I've heard about stovetop burners. Another gentleman, he said, "I stopped by my mom's house every day right after work, right after 5 o'clock, and have a quick visit with my mom, check on her, do a few things for her there, and then I head home." He said, I knocked on the door, mom opened the door, "Hi, how are you doing?" And he was, as I was getting ready to come in, and something caught my eye over her shoulder. And I looked in there just in time to see her little doily tablecloth, poof, catch on fire. He goes running in there and he puts it out, and his timing was perfect. And he noticed that the candles were lit and one of the candles had fallen over. And he goes, mom, we talked about this. You can't light your candles. I think that's a real generational thing, lighting your candles for dinner, because my grandma used to do that all the time. And she goes, "Well, I didn't light them. Someone else must have lit the candles." Well, she lived alone. She did light the candles. She just forgot. And she forgot she was not supposed to light the candles. And then She lit the candles and then forgot she lit the candles, and the candle burned down and got a little bit wobbly, fell over, caught the little doily tablecloth on fire right as my client opened the door and said hi to his mom. You talk about incredible timing. That story could have had a much different outcome. And then you have some other issues that are directly related to dementia, wandering away from your home or driving away from your home and you can't find your way back home. That's pretty common, and that will trip a silver alert. We have silver alerts going on all the time. I think more often than not, the person is found and they're okay and has a happy ending, but unfortunately, some of those silver alerts end in tragedy. So, I mean, that's a major, obviously a major safety issue. Wandering away, can't find your way back home. Not quite as apparent. Not taking your medications on time. Or not taking them at all. Or taking two doses in one sitting. So that is a major, major safety issue and health issue and health hazard. And then there's some more obvious ones: injured at home, frequent falls, frequent hospitalizations. I visited one, you know, potential client. She was a super nice lady, and her mother has Alzheimer's, and her mom's living there alone in the house. And this super nice lady is back and forth, checking on her mom. At this point, you cannot leave her alone, and she has stairs in the house, and I saw her mom walk. I would be terrified of my mom falling down those stairs. And so we talked about all that, and I think we're going to be helping her with placement here real soon. But the bottom line is, when it's no longer safe to live at home, that should trigger the conversation of considering moving from your home to a senior care community. I'm going to have a whole lot more coming up next.
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, call now, toll free, 1-800-331-6445. Operators are standing by, 1-800-331-6445. I'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, go to seniorcarelive.com. And don't forget to check out all of our podcasts of all of the recent episodes, again, at seniorcarelive.com. All right, so I just talked about, you know, when to consider moving from your home to a senior care community, and the number one reason would be safety, you know, no longer safe to live at home, and a lot of different safety issues or potential safety issues. I'm going to add one more. I'm going to add one because guess what? I've been hearing a lot about this also, where people are staying at home way too long in unsafe or maybe just very, very unclean, just not good living quarters or situations. And they've really overstayed in a major way. And I understand that because of the fear of COVID. But guess what? The fear of COVID, that's no longer a factor, and it's time to do something. But, you know, you have people living in the home, and they're living in just unsanitary and, frankly, just horrible conditions. And you just can't do it. You can't do it. So here's an example. Let's say if there is an incontinent adult living in the home, and let's say they refuse to wear the pull-up briefs, or they're just like, oh no, I'm not doing that, or I would prefer not to do that, and they go to the bathroom in their pants, and then now they're sitting in their chair, and now they have a mess on the floor, and it's unsanitary for themselves, their skin, and their health condition personally. This is actually, and a lot of people are probably wrinkling up their face like, oh, come on, Steve. This is way more common than you would ever believe. Okay. Not putting the dishes up, food sitting out on the counter. Now we have bugs getting into the house or the apartment. We have people, not eating properly. We have just unsafe living conditions. So let me say this about this. You can let that go on for a certain amount of time. But let me tell you something. If a mandatory reporter enters the home and they feel this is an unsafe environment where they feel neglect has taken place, or maybe even abuse has taken place, guess what they're going to do? They are mandated to report that situation to the state authorities. Well, what do you mean, mandatory reporter? Someone from a home care company, a home health agency, someone from hospice, a physical or occupational or speech therapist, coming out from a rehab service, a skilled nursing visit, a nurse coming by from a home health agency. They see this and they're like, oh, no, that's no. They have to report it. They are bound to report that to this. They're obligated to report it to the state authorities. And guess what? Now you have the government in your personal business. The government can force you from your home and place you in some sort of a facility of their choosing so that you will be in a safe, quote-unquote, safe and healthy and clean environment. They'll put you in a place of their choosing, even if that place is an absolutely terrible, horrible place. And guess what? There's nothing. I keep saying guess what, but this stuff kind of blows me away. You don't want the government in your personal business, okay? I think we can all agree to that. But there's nothing you can do about it. Not one thing. So I would much rather face the situation myself, call my own shots, make my own decisions, rather than to have the government in my personal family business. So do not let this happen. Take action immediately, even if it's very uncomfortable. And that reminds me of another story. It's been several years ago, but I get a call from a really nice lady calling from Denver, Colorado. And she calls and she said, well, my grandparents are living here in the Kansas City area. And they had someone from home health come in. And she said, grandma's not really able to help grandpa very well anymore. And he was sitting in his own mess in the chair. He had skin breakdown. Neither one of them were eating properly. They were falling, trying to get up and get to the bathroom and to the kitchen and to their bedroom, etc. And they got reported. And the state of Missouri calls the next of kin with power of attorney, and that's me calling from Denver, Colorado, saying, they're going to place my grandparents in a particular facility. And she said, no, can you allow me a little bit of time so that I can have some input on that? Is there any way that we can do that? And she said, I've contacted a gentleman named Steve Keeker with Senior Care Consulting, and he helps families find the right facility and the best place for their loved ones. And I've just engaged with his services. Can you allow him just a little bit of time to take care of this rather than to force them out into a place that we didn't choose? He said, what's his name? What's his phone number? So I get a call from a representative from the state of Missouri explaining the whole situation, asking me if I've been retained by this nice lady. I said, yes, I have, and I'm working on that. Can you give me a couple of days? I'll just try to turn this around as quickly as possible. And he said, all right, you've got 2 days. So guess what I did? I did backflips. And I worked with this nice lady who flew into Kansas City that very day. And we got this taken care of. And we chose a much better place than the place they were going to go. But the whole point of it is, so we were able to save that one. But, most of the time, the state just takes care of it. And you're just stuck. So I just wanted to let you know that I'm going to add that on to the safety issue, the safety column of when to consider moving from home to senior care community. That's totally in your control. You just have to decide whether or not you're going to take action or let the situation devolve into a situation where it's possible that you could be accused of neglect and not taking care of these people that you love. And so tough decisions have to be made many, many times. All right, so let's not dwell on that. Let's move on to number two, when to consider moving from your home to a senior care community. This is number two, and I would say this is a close number two, or maybe even a 1A. When the caregiver's health and well-being are negatively impacted and are in decline. So when the health and well-being of the caregiver is just in decline and the caregiver is just being crushed by the stress of being the caregiver. And, you know, I've heard of people who, you know, spend so much time pouring their life into their loved ones. And that's just so commendable. And that's a beautiful thing. But when it starts to be to your own detriment, I've heard of people even completely stressing and straining their marriages because it's just gone too far. You can't do that. You can't put your health and your relationships in jeopardy. Do the best that you can, but at some point, it reaches a point where you just can't do that any longer. Because guess what? Now you are declining and the people you're caring for are declining and you just can't have that. So we're talking about your mental and emotional and spiritual and physical health. And let me say this, stress is a very powerful force. And gosh, not to be too much of a downer here, but I've seen a lot of caregivers put their needs last. And they always do this. I'm going to take my loved one to their doctor's appointments, but I'm going to put mine off. You know what? I'm just going to skip this year's annual physical. I'll just do it next year. I feel pretty good. I'm fine. So you skip the physical. You skip the exams. You skip the UA that they do. You skip the blood draw, where if there's something happening, they catch it. That's why you do these things once a year. Now you put it off for a year, and guess what? There may be some negative issue that could have been caught that was not caught because you put your own doctor's appointments on the back burner. And you disengage with relationships, and you quit going to your church. You quit meeting for your ladies' luncheon or your men's group on Friday mornings at the donut shop with coffee. And so you don't have that socialization, and you put off going to the dentist. And all of a sudden, and the whole time you're being crushed by the stress. I've seen a lot of people pass away way before the person they're caring for. And if that happens, you have completely defeated the purpose because you're no longer here to care for and make sure your loved one is receiving all the support and love that they need and that they deserve. So you just can't do it. So a 1A or a close to is when the caregiver's health and well-being are in decline. At that point, that should definitely trigger the conversation of when to consider moving from your home to a senior care community. I have two more coming up next.
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, call now, toll free, 1-800-331-6445. Operators are standing by, 1-800-331-6445. I'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, visit seniorcarelive.com. All right, so I kind of feel like a little bit of a downer on that last segment, you know, maybe the one before, but you know, this is tough information, but it's true and it's accurate, and I really hope this is helpful to you and your family as you're navigating these waters. This is tough stuff. I mean, this is some of the most difficult and agonizing and just heartbreaking, heart-wrenching decisions and conversations that you'll ever have. And frankly, I think that's why a lot of people put them off. But you're doing yourself and your loved one a disservice by putting that off. So just have the courage, be in the right setting, come to the conversation from a position of love, and never lie. Don't lie to people. Don't lie to your parents, your grandparents, your family, your loved one. Be honest. But you can do that with compassion and with love. And you can have the tough conversations, and you can cry. And you can get through that. It's tough stuff. It's really tough stuff. So, all right. So I'm really breaking down the topic of when to consider moving from your home to a senior care community. We've covered two big ones. Now, the third thing that should trigger that conversation is when the cost of home care becomes too expensive. Now, if you know me, or if you've listened to this show for any period of time, I am a major proponent, major fan of home care services. And that's the non-medical in-home care, where someone can come in for 2 or 3 hours a day for up to 24 hours a day. To help you with things around the house, to help you with your activities of daily living. And it can also go above and beyond that and drive you to appointments, maybe run out and get groceries, run by the pharmacy, pick up your medications, take you to and from a doctor's appointment, and all the things around your home. You know, help you getting dressed, and maybe do a little, pick up the house, a little light housekeeping, some laundry, maybe cook some meals, some make ahead meals and that sort of thing. So just offer companionship. So I'm a huge fan of home care, but you have to be able to afford that. So 24-hour, so if home care is coming in for, three times a week for 8 hours a day, or every day for 4 hours, or whatever your schedule is, you need a break. You need the break so that you can go to your own hair appointment, dentist appointment, doctor's appointment. You can go to your social group with the ladies from church. On your Bible study, you can go with the men's group and meet Friday morning at the donut place and have a donut and some coffee and talk with the boys. So you can go to church, and home care can help kind of spell you and break up that week, and you can get a lot of mileage out of that. That could really, really help you provide care for months and months to come, and maybe years to come. But when that need raises to that 24-hour a day level, it can be pretty expensive. And it could be $12,000 to, $18,000, $20,000 a month. And it could be even more than that. Okay, so that's pretty expensive. Now, a lot of folks that I work with my firm Senior Care Consulting, they have long-term care insurance policies that can pay some of that. That's fantastic. Some people are very blessed and they're able to pay for that for a period of time, and that's wonderful. But sometimes that's just not affordable very long. And so you may, at some point, if that cost rises to those levels and that need rises to that 24 hours of care, at some point financially, you may have to say, look, we need to talk about and consider transitioning and moving from our home to a senior care community, just driven by the finances of it all. All right. And then last but not least, when the care that you can provide is just not enough, you just can't keep up. I always like to ask the question, why not consider changing your role? Well, what do you mean changing my role? Changing your role from the caregiver, the hands-on care provider, to a care manager or care advocate. Meaning, and you can find a place on your own, or you can work with my firm, Senior Care Consulting. If you work with my firm, Senior Care Consulting, together We will find the best fit and the best place available for your loved one. And then once they transition from their home to that senior care community, your role then changes because you're not up in the middle of the night and you're not taking your loved one to the restroom and having the difficulty transferring or getting dressed or the mealtime issues. You're not dealing with all of that stuff. They are. So all of a sudden, your role changes from the caregiver, that hands-on caregiver, to the care manager or that person's advocate, meaning, and your stress doesn't go away either. It just changes. Your stress kind of points in the direction of the care community, and then you'll see that they're doing a good job, and once you're satisfied that you're trusting them and they're doing a good job, then you check in on your mom, you check in on your dad, and you can do that now. We're no longer locked out of these facilities. You can go and you can visit your loved one. Those days are over. The COVID days of being locked out and have to look at somebody through a window or on a tablet, they're over. They're completely over. You can go in to every single senior care community that I know of. You can go in and see your loved one now in person. So go in and check on them and attend the care plan meetings and speak for your loved one and speak on their behalf and let them know everything they need to know to put them in the best possible position to provide the best care available for your mom or dad or spouse or your loved one. So hopefully that makes sense. Now, Claire, back at the Senior Care Live question of the week, I kind of had a little bit of fun with that. And I said, the only thing you need to know before searching for your community is if you can afford it or not. And of course, that's false. There's a whole lot more to it. And maybe one of these weeks coming up, I can break this down in quite a bit more detail like I just broke down this other topic. But very quickly, you need to determine what level of care you need for your loved one, long-term care, assisted living, residential care, home plus, or an intermediate care facility. You have to know what that is, what they provide, what your loved one requires, and then you have to make that match. Now, we do this for our clients every single day with Senior Care Consulting. We can take care of this for you, but you can also do that on your own if you'd like. Then you have to determine what type of care you need. General care, memory care, skilled nursing and rehab, or mental health care, hospice care, or respite care. And then you have to determine, how are you going to pay for this? What is the payment method that you're going to use? Private pay, Medicare, Medicaid, long-term care insurance, VA aid and attendance benefit. You can sell your house to fund the care. I mean, there's a lot to it, right? What are your location parameters? And then what are your personal preferences and needs? So I just flew through that, but obviously there's a whole lot more in it involved than, can I afford that or not? Or, what is my budget? There's so much more to it. And this is what we do for our clients every single day at Senior Care Consulting. If you have questions about that, let me know. Would love to offer you a free consultation and visit with you about that. All right. I'm your host, Steve Kuecker, and I wish you grace and peace. May God bless you and your family on this day and always. Join me next week, right here on Senior Care Live.